starting the topic of Kufi and Megillah and all else by the two dots, before we're discussing people who are refused to show up in Beis Din, over here we're talking about the person being served notice so that they can come to Beis Din. What's Beis Din's obligation in terms of serving them notice to say that you must show up in Beis Din? This is Amar Chista Kovim Zman. We want to establish a time for them to come, to show up in Beis Din. We say to them, Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. Right, we give them a bahav to show up. You know, some of the din starts on a Monday, and then the Beis Din invites them. I give them the Monday, Thursday, Monday. Zimna v'zimna v'atar zimno. Right, three periods of time, three times that the Beis Din has said. Ulamachar kadvina. And the next morning, they write the pitcha. Right, they write the pitcha de shamto. They write the document putting him in shamta for his refusal to show up in a court. Now we wait until the next morning because we give him the entire day in order to show up in court. We don't say that in the afternoon we write the pitcha. We wait till the next morning in order to do that.
Tuesday
morning, it sounds like it. Ravasi Ikla Bei Rav Kahana. And so Ravasi went to the Beis Medrash, the house of Rav Kahana. Kaza Hayi Itito. The Azmano the Dina, the Banyo, Ubitzafra, Tivala Ptiko. They saw this woman that they invited to come to a din in the morning. Right? In the afternoon, Ubitzafra in the morning, Tivala Ptiko. And the next morning they wrote on her a Ptiko de Jamta. Amale lo Sabala Mar, the Had Amra Chista, Kobinzman, Sheni Bechamishi Visheni. Right, Eino Hanami, that you took care of the part that you didn't wait until the morning to write the Ptiko de Jamta. But you only gave her one day. Right. What happened to this chance of giving her Bahab, of giving her Monday, Thursday, Monday? It says, Amale, it's very interesting. Hane mili gavro, that's only by a man. The onus. Right? That he is working, or he's out of town, he's on business, so he doesn't have the opportunity to show up whenever you call him. But let's say b'mato, he's on the city. Aval itada, given the ita b'mato, since the woman is generally found in the city, and if she doesn't come, then she is considered to be right in violation or in contempt of the court's invitation, and you write it right away. So this idea of Monday, Thursday, Monday is just to offer the person, busy people, the opportunity to come and not to have an excuse. You know, I can't make it this day, I can't make it that day. So we offer them what seems to be a range of opportunities to show up. And if they can't show up for that, then we say they're in violation or contempt of court. Whereas someone who's always available or should be available, then we say they're in contempt of court right away if they don't show up. Now again, I think they're just using these man and woman as an aptipus. It's not that it's man or woman, but it's basically people who have, when people have the opportunity to show up and they don't show up, then they're in violation right away. If people have other commitments or out of town, then we don't say find them in violation or contempt of court until they actually, you know, give them a period of time or span of time in which they don't show up to the court. Right, so now, Amar of Yehuda, Lo yahivina zimna, lo biyomid nisan, velo biyomid tishrei. We don't serve notice for people to come to court, not in Nisan and not in Tishrei. So why not in Nisan and Tishrei? So Rashi writes, why not in Zimna biyomid nisan? Is it imizamin adam ledim benisan tishrei? Shehein zvan katir batir. The time that people are busy in the fields, meaning that in agrarian society, right, when there's the chakla ut, is the focus of the people, then Tishrei and Nisan are very busy periods. It's unfair to expect someone to show up to court in those periods of time. It would take them away from their work, or they're not even focused on it because they're so busy. So we can't serve them notice, or we don't ask them to show up to court in Nisan or Tishrei. Now, obviously, application or implications over this are that when you are not in an agrarian society, this wouldn't necessarily be applicable, meaning that Tishrei Nisan would not necessarily be applicable today to people who are not involved in agricultural society, or for someone who's in the tax area, you know, whatever the tax filing dates are during that time in April 15th or December, whatever people have, there are certain periods of time that are considered, right, too busy or taboo to ask someone to come to court. That's fine, or maybe during the month, you know, an Av, or during the 3 weeks, those types of times where it would be unacceptable and even considered in contempt of court. That's Rashi's explanation. The Rambam. When he brings down a Mishnah Torah, writes the reason that Nisan and Tishrei are not considered, or times that we bring people up, is Mipnei Amoadot. Because of the holidays. In the holidays, if I had a Nisan and Tishrei, it's unfair. People are busy. It's unfair to expect them to show up to court when they're preparing for Pesach, or during Pesach, or the Yom Noraim, or through Sukkot. Right? It's not acceptable or it's not considerate to ask him to show up to court. Now, obviously, the Rambam halacha means that it's irrespective of one's occupation or time period because mu'adot are of application. What might be an afkamina, according to the Rambam, is after the chagim. What happens like now? In Nisan, that's after Pesach. According to the Rambam, does that still have a qualification as mu'adot? Or is it mu'adot then when the mu'adim ends? Right? So this is machlokes as achronim, how to look at the Rambam post the holidays, whether that's already considered, okay, time that zman that you couldn't invite someone, or do we say no, it's a problematic time because people are still matzniach klei achag. They're putting away their Pesach kelim, right, they're cleaning up, they're getting back to normal. So during the whole month, it's considered inappropriate, even though the mu'adim end at the 21st or 22nd of the month, whether it's Nisan or Tishrei. Well, other times that you're not allowed to invite is lo b'malei yom tova, v'lo b'malei shabbos. You can't do an erev yom tov, erev shabbos. You can't invite somebody to a din. Now, aval min nisan lebatar yom nisan. You can't serve notice during nisan for someone to show up in court for days after nisan. That's not a problem. Yom tishrei lebatar tishrei kavina. You can set the court date post the tishrei and nisan and serve notice during tishrei and nisan. But mimalei shabbos the batei mimalei shabbos lo kavina. But on erev Shabbos, you can't serve notice to show up on Sunday. I mean that there's a difference. I think that you could formulate it in one of two ways. You could say that either when you're talking about a whole month where people are busy, then you're right. They can't show up to court, but they have the mindset or they can see something and know that in the future they'll have to show up in court. They have the wherewithal to focus on it. Whereas if you're talking about a single day, like Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov, people are so busy they won't even focus until after Shabbos on what the notice is. They don't look at their mail until after Shabbos. So they won't even focus on it to see the notice after Shabbos. Or you can look at it in a more ruchani area that when people are looking at Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov, they're still at Sukkim. I mean, these are days that are, you know, in terms of their meaning and their they're so meaningful in the terms of their preparation and how, right, the Shabbos and the Yom Tov are only as good as the preparation that comes before. Therefore, we say the person's not focused on being served notice, even though it's for afterwards. Whereas when we're talking about Nisan and Tishrei, we're talking about, right, broad swaths of time, but talking about either the guys working in the field, things that are not as, call it, essential. And even according to the Rambam's explanation of Moadot, it's still a much broader, right, spectrum of time versus a single day of preparation. For one comes, right? We have this in the Gemara and Pesachim about the fact that the Eliyahu Navi does not come on Erev Yom Tov, Erev Shabbos. We modiah the people because, well, first of all, they can't come on Shabbos, but also because they're at Sukkim. He won't bother them when they're preparing for Shabbos and Yom Tov. So my time, well, what's the reason? They're busy with the preparations for Shabbos. So it's always important to know that Erev Shabbos is also an important day, not just Shabbos, but that Erev Shabbos is the preparation of Shabbos is what makes the Shabbos. Amar of Nachman. We do not serve notice to people in the kala, which is people who are coming to hear the drasha on Shabbos. Right, the kala where they used to get all the people together. We don't serve them notice during that. Why? Because then we'll give people disincentive to show up to the shir. And that we want people to show up to the shir. All of a sudden people know they're going to be served notice at the shir. They're going to stop learning Torah. They're going to stop showing up to the shir. Therefore, we say no service and notice.
This is referring to Shabbat Amash?
Well, yeah, it sounds like it. It's interesting, right? I also notice that Rashi says, "Vayim shmoad drasha b'chol Shabbat, inu minu baba yom sheni ladin." Right, so that even it sounds like even on Shabbos they could have served them notice to show up to Beis Din. It's interesting, right? On Shabbos itself, but love today,
maybe it would like there would be a rule that says referring to Yashikala.
Oh, that's the next one. But love today, rigla b'rigla. So now on the day rigla the rigla, what's the rigla? Vayim shmoad lachota regel. Kodem regel lamed yom. That would be the kala, like you're describing, Yarfika, but a kala where, you know, before the chagim, they had these big shirim on alachot of the shir 30 days before. So those are also, during those shirim on alachot, they're preparing for the chag, you don't serve notice then, again, for the same reason, which is why we don't want to disincentivize people from showing up to the shir because they're afraid of the being served notice or being the warrants coming out. You know, we don't switch a halachic Rukhani experience, right, or a learning experience, into something that has, right, mundane political implications. So we try to separate between the two so that people can learn Torah and not be afraid to learn Torah, and that when the other issues, we bring them up. Now, Kiyava Atul the Kamezer of Nachman, they used to come before Rav Nachman, they would come, people, claimants, would used to come before Rav Nachman and say, listen, let's get to the guys here, let's invite them to a tent. He said that he would say to them, is this why I gathered everybody together? I didn't gather people together to serve them notice. I gathered them together to teach them Torah. And that's what I'm going to do here. Serving notice, issues of the court are not issues that are relevant to the shiuri. Vaidna, this is an interesting exception. Vaidna, the Ika Ramai Chayshina. So today that there are, what we call, deceivers, thieves, people who are less than honest, then Chayshina, we worry about it. So the Rambam, in codifying it, seems to indicate that we don't even have to wait for them. I mean, that we tell them to come to the din. If someone shows up and is ready for is here, and we're afraid that they're going to their flight risk, that they're going to leave, we invite them to the din right away. We say immediately come to din right now. Not even about serving notice for a future day, but we say right now let's go to the din. But it seems to be that obviously if someone is a flight risk or someone is problematic, then we have to do something. We have to take. It sounds like from the Gemara. To take ulterior measures in order to ensure that they do show up to court or that we can get them to the court. If they're always going to escape, right, or always not be available, then it's going to cause problems in terms of enforcing the din or their ability to bring a reason to impose a judgment on this individual. Alright, im, ayat davar sheish bo achrayut chayavim l'shalem. So this is the last line in the Mishnah. Again, when we saw the Mishnah, we saw two interpretations of how to read achrayut. So the interpretation of Rabbi, into his Reb Shimon, his son, and the interpretation of Rava, who brought Reb Yoshia, who explained it in the Brisa. Now, Matni Le Rabbi the Reb Shimon Brei, which is the one explanation. Lo Davar Sheish Ba'Achayut Mamash Elafilu Parav Chorish Ba Chamor Mechamer Chorav Chayvim Lachazir Mifnei Kvod Aviem. So his explanation of Achayut is Davar Mitsuyam, identifiable stolen object, where it's obvious that the object is stolen. It would be a Gia in Kvod Aviem if they use it, because everybody will know that it's a stolen object. Therefore, they have to return it because of Kvod Aviem. What about a couch which a person eats on or lays on and a shulchan and they eat on it? Mau, what is the din? I mean, do they have a din like a para and a chamor? Why? Because first of all, they are davar mitsuyam. They're identifiable objects. They're clearly things that people could say, oh, this belongs to this person. It's his couch. Right? It's a stolen object. On the other hand, the couches and tables are used inside the house, whereas a para and a chamor are used outside the house. So do these have a din of davar mitsuyam, of davar sheish b'achrayut, or not? Amalo, tein l'chacham v'yachkei mod. Give to the chacham and he will be smarter. So Rashi interprets it, right? The answer is, kapara v'chamor kein mitam shulchan. When you say tein l'chacham v'yachkei mod, it means that they're similar items that are, these are the same continuum, the same place, so you could say, you know, that's here. You have to let, if I teach you one thing, you should be able to draw the conclusion to the other things, which is that mitan and shulchan have the same din as chamor and parah. So that would mean a broader definition of what, right, of what, davar mitsuyam is. It doesn't necessarily have to be a publicly, right, identifiable object, but an object that is identifiable, that anybody who saw it would know that it is a stolen object, even if it's inside your house. Okay, the next Mishnah enters us into a very, very important sugya, two huge sugyot. So what I'll try to do, we'll read through it, and I'll try to give you some of the highlights of the Rishonim as we go through it. We can't, unfortunately, can't plumb the depths of this. It's a huge sugya with major implications, but at least we get a little flavor for it. Right, aim for theme, lo mi tebat mochsim, lo mi kis shel gabayim. You do not take change. If you need to exchange money, change money. We don't do it out of the box of the tax collector. And not from the pockets of the gabayim. Obviously, it's not like our erlich gabay here. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the gabayim here who are collecting the kesef gulgulat varnona. Right? They're looking at the head tax and the land taxes. Right? These are people who are somehow involved in tax collection. The assumption here is that they both contain gezel, that they have stolen money inside of their boxes, so we don't want to launder the money for them in a sense. We don't want you changing money with them because you're exchanging with stolen items. Vein notlim ehem tzedakah. We don't accept tzedakah from them. Again, the idea of money laundering, right? This is somehow to clean the money, take it out of being money of gezel and then pass it through tzedakah so that it somehow justifies the stealing. Aval notelhu mitoch beito u'minashuk. You can do business or exchange with them outside of their tax collection business. I mean that if you go to his house, or he has another business in the shuk, you can buy things from him or exchange things from him. We don't assume that the illegal operation is somehow funding the legal operation. or that whatever is the, he keeps his stolen money separate from his, we call clean money.
Which is protection, like, is this what the money is?
Alright, so let's say, what's the, right, a good question, what's the issue here? So, Tana, Aval noten lo dinar, venoten lo et ashar. So it's clear from here that what? That if you give him money, for instance, he's collecting the tax, and you have to pay the tax, that if you don't have change, the right change, that you can accept change back, because Rashi says, he must still be adult. It's like saving yourself being stolen from. Meaning that if he's going to take your money, you can take change back, because we're not going to expect you just to give up all your money not to get the change back. When we say you can't change or you can't exchange money, it's when it's not a necessity. When you don't have to pay him, and you don't have to, you're not going to lose money, right, by not doing this. And when you give him a too big a coin, and you need change back from paying him the taxes, that's okay, because that's kimatzil mi yado. Now, if you just look in Tosfos says in 14 over here, says the Rabbanan, damre stam gvilo la v'yeush balim. And in general, stam gvilo is not yeush balim, then it makes sense here, at the Shapir. Right? Because, then the Mishnah makes a lot of sense, because then whatever they take, there is no yeush balim. If there's no yeush balim, you don't have yeush mishina reshut, and you're missing an ingredient which would give him a kinyan, it would remain gvila, and that's why you can't, right, you can't exchange money with him. If there was already yeush, right, then you could exchange the money because it would be yeush shini reshut, there's a kinyan, it would be outside without it not be a kapta gzila anymore. Adishab, mikom makom. Nevertheless, it says, no thing dinar, yakzilo ashar, ho bin yadua paparur shahim shal geza. You're allowed to, as opposed to Rashi, who says masil miyado, the reason that you're allowed to give, according to Tosafot, the reason you're allowed to give the money and get change back when you pay him too much is because there's no certainty that this is gezel. It's a chashash that it's gezel, but it's not a certainty, and that's why you can get your change back. On the other hand, Rav Shimon, who says, Tam zel avi yehush balim, so why can't you take change? Why can't you exchange? What, how do you explain this Mishnah? So Tosafot says, that's because Mishom zedavar megunahu. Says, not a nice thing to do. The teva v'kis miyuchedet atzni Hashem zelo shalem. This is a place that they keep their stolen items. And he's always putting stolen items in there for his dharma guna. Maybe even, I see others that formulate it as misayeya lovrea vera. That you're helping people, right, can conduct illegal activity, or you're somehow justifying their illegal activity by exchanging money or giving credence to the fact that they have this money. If we boycott them, right, then there's a possibility that that would somehow dissuade them from conducting such activity. Now the Gemara is going to ask, Umuksim. The tax collector. Why is it that you can't exchange with the tax collector? What's wrong with the tax collector? Vaum Moer Shmuel. Dina, the Machus Dina. Shmuel is a general principle that the laws of the land, right, dictate. And the law of the land is to collect the taxes. Why shouldn't you be able to collect taxes? Why is the Muksim? Why is the tax collector here doing anything illegal? So now just looking at Dina and Machus Dina in a broad context, right, there are two general approaches that the Rishonim take to why Dina Machus Dina. One possibility is that the king owns all the land. Right, the king owns all the land. There's eminent domain. He controls the land. And he can dictate the laws on his land. If you don't like it, pick up and leave. Right, don't be here. That's one direction in the Rishonim. The other direction in the Rishonim is that it's a social contract. That is an agreement amongst all the people that live there. That we're going to have, or we're going to accept the authority of the king, because in order to prevent anarchy, or in order to, right, have a, some sort of framework, social framework in which we can live, that is manageable, we agree that dina de machut dina. Those are the two general approaches. Now these have major nafkamina b'alakha. First of all, one of the halachot is, does it have application in Eretz Yisrael? Which is the famous Ran, the Ran in the Dorim, brings down quotes from Shema Tosafot. He quotes the reason for Dina Machus Dina as being the fact that the king owns the land. So if you look here, because Rubin Tosfos, the Dafka Ovdei Kochavim, Amar Dina de Machus Dina, only by non-Jewish kings, Mifnei Sha'aret Shelo, because the land belongs to him. The Acholam Alehem, Lo Tatsum Mitzvotai, Igeresh Etchem Min Aret, you don't like it, leave. Aval B'Malchei Yisrael Lo, when it comes to Malchei Yisrael, that is not true, the Fish Eretz Yisrael, so if you believe that the driver for Dina Machus Dina is the land ownership, that's true in a place where the king has domain or dominion over the land. In Eretz Yisrael, that's not true of the king. Call it Eretz Yisrael Kulam Shutafim Ba. That's the case. The king doesn't have the same dictates, or he can't make the same dictates, you know, like it or leave, because he doesn't have that right, because the land is not necessarily owned by him. The other direction in the Rishonim is, again, that what? The fact that It's a social contract somehow between the people, an agreement between the people. What Nafkamina that will have is what type of laws can the king make? Meaning, can the king make laws that that are affecting a specific group of people or specific individuals? Or can he only address laws that deal with society as a whole? The other is the Meiri in the Dorim writes this. He says, has to be a law, like that goes into effect, a long-ranging law, that has effect on the entire society. That he makes some law about one individual, or directs things at specific groups of people or individuals, which seems more punitive, or right, the king's own will, rather than the will of the people of the social contract. Right, so, the chosha so der klaus din gamoru. That anything he does in general is considered a general din. Right, and over here he says, v'davar zen, in b'chiluk ben malchei Yisrael malchei utolam. Obviously, if the dictate is not about the land itself, but rather about the king's ability to have a social structure, then it should have equal application both to non-Jewish kings and to Jewish kings. Right? So, Ramban, I'll bring the Ramban also from Babalacho. Everybody knows about this. It's a widespread law. And these are things that kings normally do. They're written down, they're legislated, they're obvious, they're for everybody to see. Something new or something that's just, you know, like a whim of the king. That's robbery. Thievery. We don't do this. We don't deal with that type of dina, the machusa dina. Rashbam in Babalatra, which is to quote you from before, the Rashbam in Babalatra says, Komisim anoyot minagot shomishpetem lachim shirvim laznig machutam dinahu. Shikol bnei machut mekablim aleim mirtzunam. Everybody accepts that social contract to chukei amelach mishpetav yotachtim gamur. So we quoted before, I didn't catch the Rashbam before, but that's the other day, right? The Rashbam who says Dina Makusadina has application because of the social contract between the people who live in such a Medina. Right? The other Machlaminos again was brought over Moshe Tshuva and Igros Moshe, that laws or Dina Makus only applies to laws that help or that have social benefit. That they have social benefit or help the fabric of society. That they have a benefit to society, that's only Dina where Dina Makusadina applies. There are other Achronim, there are others that believe that Dina Delchut Amilai, as long as it's a benefit to the king. As long as the king derives some sort of benefit, that sounds more like the Ran, right, which is that the king dictates, as long as it's the king's benefit. But if it's something that has no benefit whatsoever, both of those opinions agree that there is no Dina Delchut Adina. There are other Achronim that believe that Dina Delchut Adina is even to, not, in some sense, nonsensical, but things that are not necessarily logical or social or the king's benefit, they may not apply. Even if they don't apply, or not in those categories, they still, the king has the right to create whatever he wants, and that is Dina de Mechuta Dina. But again, you'll have a spread of options depending on what you believe is the reason for Dina de Mechuta Dina. Right now, just continue. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute. Okay, so Dina de Mechuta Dina, I have a problem with our Mishnah, who says the Mechusim is Gazlan. So how do I reconcile? Amar Rav Chanina bar Chanan, Amar Shmuel, B'mochis, She'en lo Kitzvah. This is a tax collector that has no limit. A tax collector has no limit. That is not considered dina de malchut dina. That's considered to be unreasonable. He's a gazlan. Because there is, if there's no limit, then that's not really tax, right? That's called thievery. This is a self-appointed, a vigilante tax collector. In that he's not coming from the power of the king. He's, right, doing his own thing. Over here, that type of tax collector, you don't have to respond to. That is considered gizel. So now the Gemara, there are others that put this or say this expression or this explanation or reconcile the stira between Dina Machut and Dina and Mokhez in another place. Person is not allowed to wear a kilayim. Afilu agabe asara begadim. Doesn't matter if it's on top of 10 begadim and he's getting no hana'ah from the begad whatsoever. Still, it needs to kilayim of ha'alah, putting it on, not just hana'ah. Lavriach bo'atamechas. In order to what? Escape the tax. Matitan Dilok Rabbi Akiva. Our mission is not like Rabbi Akiva. This mission means in Kilayim is not like Rabbi Akiva. Titania, we have a brisa. Asula Briachas and Mechas. You're not allowed to run away from paying the tax.
But if he puts it on, so
right, if you're wearing, it's quickly like a customs. In any clothing you wear through customs or your clothing, you don't have to pay taxes on it. you're wearing clothing through that you're not wearing, you got to pay taxes on it. So he puts on the clothing to escape the taxes. So here, so Rabbi Gibb, the Tanya Asur Labriya Ketameset. Right, so Rabbi Gibb says, you're not allowed to run, the Tanya Kabbalah says, you're not allowed to run away from the Meset. Shimon Rabbi Shimon Gibb, Mutar Labriya Ketameset. You're allowed to escape, you're allowed to run away from the Meset. Abishlo, Malayin Yan Kilayin Bad Mesoket. I can understand the machlokas between, between Rabbi Kiva and the Tanna Kamma when it comes to Kil'ayim itself. What's the issue with Kil'ayim? What's it allowed to wear it or not allowed to wear it? Which is, the Mar Sabra Dover Shem Skavin Mutar, like Rabbi Shimon, right? That the Loch of Dover Shem Skavin is Mutar. So here, that's exactly what you have. You're wearing the bag not as a beggar, but to escape the Mecca. So that's the Dover Shem Skavin. The Dover Shem Skavin, that would be Mutar. Mark of the Ganein is a sore, and therefore you can't wear it even to escape the method. To escape paying taxes, since when is that mutar? Right, we have the same application. Right, again, it's a mochas that has no limit. Right, and that is a self-appointed mochas. That's the second time we saw this stat reconciliation between method. And Dina de Machusa Dina, one is our Mishnah, the next one is Kilayim, and here's the third one, Meika de Matni Laha. This is a Mishnah we saw together in Nidarim. No dream, the Haragin, or the Haramim, or the Muksin. You can take a Neder to these people who are, killers and robbers, and to the tax collectors. Shehisho Truma. To say, no, you can't take this, that's Truma. Shehisho Beit HaMelech, this belongs to the king. Afo Pishen Truva, Afo Pishen Beit HaMelech, even though it's not true. You can take a nether, a false nether in a sense, even though if it's not true, you can take this false nether to protect yourself from these robbers, these thieves, or from the tax collector. Right? Well, the Mopsin, what do you mean? Why are you trying to escape the tax collector? Bama Shmuel, Dina de Mafusa Dina. How can you escape those letters? Dina Mena, Amra Ksenia Barakana, Mashmuel, Mokashin Lukitva, Dibi Rabbi Amra, Mokas Omeid Le'elav. Right? Until now, three cases, all similar, all have the same solution. Now, all of a sudden, the Gemara introduces a third reason, Rav Ashi Amar, the Mokhez Kinani, a non-Jewish tax collector. Ashi already now introduces a huge problem over here, and a huge issue we'll deal with in a second in Shonim. Before we jump there, I just want to point out Tosafot over here. The Tosafot says, when you take the net there, I would have thought you take the net there, right, and you say, okay, in his mind, he says, it's not a real net there, he's just taking it, it's like Menidre Avai, it's a net there that has no application, no manifestation, because he's just taking the net to protect himself, he doesn't really believe it. Tosus over here says that, and the Gemara in the Dari mentions over there, refresh the Amar Tav Sam, he has two co-parents of Lam, Allah, he made him shall Truma. That's what he says, he says out, all the fruits of the world be asur to me if it's not true. Umechashay bili bo hayom. And he says, in his heart, he says, that only means today. I won't eat any fruits. Or the fruits only are asur to me today. They didn't have terrible. Or do hayom feel bad? Ba'afagot v'reim shulei v'inam devarim, even though generally we believe that what you think in your heart has no application to what you say, because it's eventually in the Devarim. Nevertheless, over here, because of the duress that's being placed on him, we say Devarim Shalev are Devarim, and that can uproot or undermine the Fatah, what he's saying with his mouth. So you have to have, according to Tosvot, right, that you have to have some sort of manifestation on the Nether. The Nether has to be Chal, but you can limit or qualify the Nether in your mind by saying it only applies today, only for this hour. But you have to have it work. And listen, Tosfos writes, he says today, it's interesting, just historical thing, that these Anasim, the Jews who live among them, they used to make the Jews swear that they wouldn't leave their city, that they would stay here. Not exactly, generally they want to keep the Jews out of the neighborhood. Here they take making them take a nether that they won't leave the neighborhood. I mean, because they were good taxpayers, they needed their servants, whatever it was that they... Right. To call in the door sam, they can make a sam nether shloyitzu that they won't leave. Ubelibam yechshivu ayom, say oh just today I won't leave. Afilu hu mefarish b'sadav shloyitzu mimeno koy mechayav. Even though explicitly says I will not leave here my whole life, in his mind he can say for an hour. Echol arim lakshovi bo shum tnai v'imavatel b'sfatav alachash kosh ken David bitul gamor. Certainly, if he whispers under his breath to remove it, to reverse it, that'd be even better. But you see from Tosfos, an unbelievable thing that you have to. Right. You have to have some sort of, right, you have to, it's not like that the nether falls apart by itself, that it's a nether that's carbon caro because you never really intend for the nether to be manifested, it's really just to ruin, to take it away, it's not a real nether. Doesn't say, no, it's a real nether, you've got to deal with it. How do you deal with it? You've got to have some divine shibalev, need something like, let's take the day Musari, you need to have a tent for your real neder, and you have to have some sort of tent or harim, right, to create a way so that the neder actually chal but chal in a limited or qualified manner. Now we're going to deal with Rashi. Rashi says, "B'mokhes k'nani." What do you mean? Why? Just because he's a non-Jewish tax collector, all of a sudden it's considered gezel, you can escape from him, you're allowed to run away from the taxes? Why is that? So Rashi has one word which changes the whole dynamic here. Look at Rashi, the Divrei Maskil, B'mokhes shuknani, anas. Rashi has one word and that changes everything that Rashi says. Anas is someone who is what? He's coming, he's a robber, he's a thief, he's a person who forces people under duress to pay taxes.
And if he's a Jew?
Right, so why does that help you if he's a Jew?
I mean, the same thing we said before.
Right. So there, Rashi says, V'im lachush im gozlo. You have to worry about stealing from him. The assumption here is that they were not Jewish because they were living under non-Jewish rule. Saying that if a Jew acts in the same manner, in an illegal manner, he would do that.
That's what he said. If he's an
Arash,
it's a chil Hashem, if you give him.
No, so he says, Hecha, the lech is chil Hashem. You're allowed to lie to him, you're allowed to cheat him. As long as he doesn't know about it, because then there is no chilul Hashem.
It's the same thing. It's a thief. Right. It's right.
So this, according to Rashi, this is another manifestation of a illegal or textbook so that you don't have to respond to. Right. That's the way Rashi qualifies it over here. But the problem with that is, why did Ravashi only show up in the third case? I mean, why wasn't Ravashi mentioned in the other two cases? That's number one. And number two is, our Girsa does not have the word anas in it. So now the sheet is going to go back to Keshita, though. We saw this before in Babi Kama, back by Nezek, when it had to do with Nizakim, by Bishor, Nizak et Shor Shal Nachui. The sheet of Megvetu always quotes the Mi'iri, and on the Kedarka Bakodesh, you find the sheet of Megvetu right here on the bottom left of the daf, quotes the Mi'iri. It says, Dafko, when it says here, Kanani is Dafko, B'Kananim, Ovdei Elilim, Anasim. We're talking about these are people who are Ovdei Kofravim, Anasim, Aval Ba'otan Agdurim B'Darche Azatot. People who keep, for civil people, Western civilization, Lo Ne'er Markein. This is not said about them. Ela Im Ba'ol L'Fanei L'Din, Im Mavir L'Him Et Aderech. We don't move left or right. K'mali Machat Ali Kariv Kovad Din Et Ahar. Do everything straight and narrow because, right, they have laws and dinim, and that these are applicable even today. So
he
says that.
Yeah,
then the next case. It is the Braita. I'm just telling you that this is for Rashi. We're going to get to all the cases of the Braita in 1 second. Right, the last thing I'll point out to you is that there's a Machlokes Raifa and the Rashba as to where this Ravashi goes on. And the Raifa says, because of the Raifa, now the Ravashi tried a Hanach Tarte. Because of both of them. Dino up, the Kilayim, the Nodrin, on everything, it applies. Ravashi is a general statement. The problem with that is, that's one is only at the end then, if it applies to all of them. But Kashli Tuva and the Rashba, in the second Baba Kamo says, you know, what are you talking about? What's he doing all the way at the end over here? So he said that the way to explain it here, and he had a different gear, so, Alma Dafka B'Makom Onit, Ulatila Shalom Heitiru, Halignov Et Amechnes V'Akipim, V'Tol Mashen Shalom Lo Heitiru. Only when there's force and duress do we allow this to happen to take the net there. Potato, Yohatam Gavim Atzizim, the Nordin, the Harogim, Hikshu, or Vriachat Amechas, Mishari. How can you escape Amechas? Ram Shmuel, Upariku, B'Mokhes, Omei Me'elav, Mokhes, Yenu Kitzva. V'lo Hiviyu Sham Haipi, for the Ravashi. They don't bring Ravashi down in that instant. Wait a minute. In our Gemara, that's exactly where Ravashi is found. It's on the case in Nidarim. Elanira Vadai, Tahad Ravashi, Lokaya, Lahaizi Kilayim. That Ravashi only applies to the case of Kilayim. Uvisvarim Mugim, Yeshiviyu Adi Kilayim Bachrunah. They write the case of Kilayim last. Uva Allah Kayim of Ashi, Vehunachom. And that's what Ravashi is going on, and that's what's the only part here. So he says that the Gnoven in Esek is not mutar. To steal from the tax collector, to steal taxes, to not pay taxes is incorrect. The Bala of the Kibin. It's unique to the case of Kilayim, which seems to be this tax that was not considered to be a proper tax. And because of that, they allowed it by Mofes Kanani. But otherwise, there's no general principle that you're allowed to, allowed to cheat it. Alright,
who's that?
That's the Rashba. The Rashba over here. Now the Gemara continues. Tanya, how do I know by Mofes Kanani? Yisrael with Kanani Anas. Shubal the Din. I mean, Yisrael and Anik Kanat that came to Din. Imatai Yahoz Zakeo Bidin Yisrael Zakeo. Right, if you can, justify the Jewish position under the Jewish law, do it. That's our din. Din ek nanim zakeu. If you can do it through the non-Jewish law, you can clear the Jew. Go ahead and do it. Then you're allowed to what? Come on, about kipim. You're allowed to do whatever you can to allow you to somehow, some chokma, some pretend to get the money out and to have the Jew escape from the duress of the anas. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Akiva Omer. So you want to know what Rabbi Akiva says? Ain ba'im alav kipim, but you can't kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Akiva adds a new dynamic here, which is what? You're not allowed to cheat. You're not allowed to do things that are not honest and straight because of chilul Hashem. There's a lack of kiddush Hashem here. Now this introduces a very, very new dynamic to the whole
thing. Kiddush Hashem is just like, I think it's the two sides of the same coin.
Right, so I think Kiddush Hashem is because, right, that is not the proper way to act. It's not the way a Jewish court acts. You can't do that. It's a Chilul Hashem. Rabbi Akiva Taimo is the Ika Kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Akiva says that the only issue seems to be Kiddush Hashem. How like the Kiddush Hashem? Had it not been for Kiddush Hashem, buying, then we would have allowed you to steal and cheat and do whatever you want. Since when can you steal from a non-Jew? Meaning that, why is the mitigating factor here, Kiddush Hashem, why is it the mitigating factor that you're not allowed to steal? And that should be the mitigating factor here. V'atanya, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Dover Zed Rashi B'Kiva, K'shabah Mizafirin, Minayin L'Gedlo K'nani Shua Asur. How do we know that stealing from a non-Jew is Asur? Tavlo Omar Acharei Nimkar Ge'ula Tiyelo. This is after an Ebed Ivri is sold to a non-Jew. You have to go, right, and redeem him. Shloim Shachenu V'Yetzei. Don't just rip him out of there and say, too bad. Right? Yoko Yiglomalav. You think that maybe Yiglomalav. Rashi says that you think maybe if the Goy asks you for undue amounts to redeem him, I think we have to listen to him. Tosus disagrees. He says that Yiglom is that maybe you think you could cheat him and make a mistake. Cheat the Kanani out of his money and pretend that you don't know. Tamalomar V'chishavim Koneu. That you have to, do the exact amount of what needs to be paid to redeem this Eved Ivri from the non-Jew. You have to be exact in everything you do with the non-Jew. I'm Rav Yosef, lo kasho, habuknani, habugir tushav. No, there's a difference between a non-Jew and a gir tushav. Gir tushav who steps not to obey over the zaraz, he's someone that we give the benefit of the doubt to, he's someone that we treat, right, like another Yisrael. But a knani, no way, knani, you could steal from him, there's no problem, guess what, knani. What do you mean? That parsha that's found in because at the end of Behar Bechukotai, by that parsha, is talking about both of them. Right? This is a case where the Medrash says that see how powerful the stuff of Mokrei Peirot, the East people who sell Peirot Shvit, because if they do this, they're going to lose their land, their house, eventually they have to sell themselves, not only sell themselves to Jews, but to a Ger Tushav, not only to a Ger Tushav, to a non-Jew, not to a non-Jew, to a Avodah Zarah itself. So you see that the parsha is talking about all these things. Lo Lecha, not even to a Jew, he's going to sell himself to a Ger. He'll sell himself to a Ger. Shneamar Leger. Lo Leger Tzedek, not just to a regular convert, Ela Leger Tushav. So Ger Tushav, Shneamar Leger Tushav. Mishpachat Ger, Zeh Oivim Kachavim. That he'll sell himself to a non-Jew too. Shomelar Olu Eiv Ger, Zeh Nim Kalo Vizitzeh Kachavim. If someone sells himself to Obedat Kachavim to work for them, to provide the water, chop the wood. So we see what? The parsha over there is talking about even when he sells himself. Even if he sells himself to a non-Jew, you still are responsible to pay him back properly. When you redeem him, you have to pay him the exact amount. You can't cheat him. Depends. If you are stealing via dayim, that is a sur. But afkat halvato, to not pay back money that you owe, that already is mutar. So now, Amar Le'Avayi, Eved Ivri, Hafkat Havato. Eved Ivri is a case of a loan, basically, that you are, right, being Hafkat Havato. Why? What is an Eved Ivri when he sells his book? He's basically selling the present value of the next 6 years of his output. He basically says, here's the price for me, now I work for you for 6 years. So he's basically, the guy's lending him the money for the output that he'll produce over the next years, and he pays him back by working. So that's Hafkat Havato. So why can't you cheat him? Rabba the Tameh, Rabba is going to reason we saw Rabba's position in Kiddushin. Tamar Rabba, Eved Ivri, Gufo Kanoi. Rabba believes that in Eved Ivri, the Gufo is Kanoi, so it's not Havkat Havato. The guy owns it. For the 6 years, he owns the Gufo of the Eved Ivri. That means when you take it, you're stealing it via dying. Not Havkat Havato. You're not just avoiding paying back a loan. Now it comes to the conclusion of our Gemara, right, that based on this, that number one, Havkat Havato is Mutar. It comes to escaping from paying one a money that is owed, not stealing directly by the money that's owed, that is mutar when it comes to gizlat nani. Number two, we have the principle of Rabbi Akiva that it has to be the kiddush Hashem. If there's any chashash shas of fila shem, that is not permitted. You can't try to do sneaky things and try to get around it when there is a problem of chilul Hashem. The last thing we have is mochet, about taxes. It's pretty clear that if the taxes are imposed properly, right, and that the taxation is not undue or under duress or done illegally, that the taxes one must pay. Now it comes to, so for instance, I won't use Israel as an example because of the problems of Dina Machus Dina we saw, whether it applies to Jews or in Israel. Let's say the IRS in America, when they impose taxation on an individual, one does not have, from this tomorrow, has, maybe there's the right from Havkat al Batol, might have the right to not pay their taxes. On the other hand, right, you have a problem of what's Chilul Hashem. That if one is caught, right, evading one's taxes, then there's a Chilul Hashem in the fact that they don't pay their taxes or they're trying to not pay their taxes. So that should be a consideration in when one doesn't pay the taxes. And again, the IRS, the imposition of taxes is not something that is random or, you know, with no kitzvah, or it's not something that is a nut. Those are things that are through the laws of the land and should have an application. So, I've heard from different poskim, you know, from, for instance, Rav Shechter believes. Shechter believes that you have to pay every last penny of your mechas because you sign at the end of the document or the text, and you sign that everything I wrote here is true. And if I sign that everything is true, then I'm making a commitment that it's true, then I have to be truthful in everything I do. And that means that you have to pay every penny, you have to do everything, because that's the deal. Very really, I've heard is that a person can take aggressive stances when it comes to paying taxes, because, right, anything that, as long as it's not tax evasion, right, but it's tax avoidance, even if it's very, very aggressive, as long as there's someone who substantiates such a position, or such a position could be in the IRS all the time in litigation against cases like that. That doesn't mean that you're a chef. Right, it's negotiation or conflict. In those instances, then you can definitely take aggressive stance because, number one, it's Avkat Havato, and number two is in that instance there probably will not be a Chilul Hashem because you took a reasonable, even though it was a far-fetched position. So you have to be careful, I mean, in terms of what position, the exact positions you take, as long as there won't be a Chilul Hashem. If a person can determine there's no Chilul Hashem taking such a position, or being very aggressive in that manner, then that should be allowed in these instances. But the most important things, or the most mitigating factors here, are Chilul Hashem. They have to be very careful. That's the Mechalel Hashem Shemayim. It's obvious that people, in many instances, are not careful about these things because they end up on the front pages of the newspaper all the time, and that is mamash, a Chilul Hashem, and it creates, I mean, huge bad problems. You can't be, these are things that don't have kapara for them. I mean, that, besides from stealing, Chilul Hashem is something that creates, you know, huge problems beyond the just the little thing of saving the money or the little stealing that one does. All right. Now, right there in the Gemara. The Gemara says, the Amar of Shimon Chasida, Gizel Kanani Asur, to steal from Kanani Asur,
Amar of Bidi Bar Gizel,
Amar of Shimon Chasida, Gizel Kanani Asur, Abed Atol Mutaret. Right, that stealing from a Kanani is Asur, but in the Veda you're allowed to keep. Gemara says, Zilo Asur, how do you know that Zilo Asur? Amar of Huna, Mirai the Gizel Kanani Shu Asur, how do you know that it's stealing from Kanani is Asur? Shnemar Bachalta, it's the Kulamim, Shashuva Kanani is Asur. That you will eat up, you will take all the possessions of nations when you come in and conquer the land. So the time when you come, it sounds like the time when you come to conquer the land and they're giving it to your hands, then you're allowed to take their position. Not when you're not going out to war and you're going to conquer them. When it's a time situation, you can't go ahead and just steal from them. How do you know that the last object of a Kanani is Muteret to keep? Right, that the only obligation to return an Aveda is because of Achicha. Right, you have to return it to your Achicha, to your brother, your Jewish brother, that's the obligation, but not to the Knani. If you look in the Torah Tashat, he says, says over here that that's the Din Knanim, that they don't really respect ownership. Which obviously have implications again to today when people do respect ownership, maybe you would have to return it. There is a day, if you look under the Ein Mishpat over here, he says, he says, Achicha. In general, when we learn Achicha from the Torah, it means another Jew like you. But here, the Ein Mishpat expands Achicha to be anybody who keeps laws and respects property like you. That'd be a huge implication. That means Midoraita, a Nani would be included under Achicha, which seems far-fetched, but that's the way the Ein Mishpat here, if you say Achicha means not just a Jew, but anybody who acts like you, that could include a much broader application of invitations to be Doraita. Wait a minute, Gemara says, the ema hani mila is a galati yadik. Right? The lomit chayiv la dure. Right? A truck. That is what, let us say, that is only when you didn't get it yet. That we don't obligate you to go ahead and chase after. No, but when it comes into your hand, maybe you have to return it. Amravino umatata. The case where you find it and you already have it in your possession. And nevertheless, the Torah says, only after you have to return it to. God will get you to chase after it. Hashem today won't apply to you, but you shouldn't take it, but then you will have to return it. Right? Says, no, that you don't have to return it at all. Now, why is that? Now, do we have to return it to a non-Jew? That's next to Mara. This is like the name in Tikkun Olam, the Mishum Eva in Gittin. When there's Chilul Hashem, you can't keep the Avedah, but you have to return it. Alright, so that's the important principle. Again, Chilul Hashem is the overarching principle here. Technically, you don't have to return the Avedah. Technically, you can keep the Avedah, no problem. If a Chilul Hashem will be generated from it, then you are obligated to do it, Mishum Eva, Mishum Tikkun Olam. Because of those reasons that will cause Chilul Hashem, that is an overarching or overriding factor here.
So, would that mean just the loss of an opportunity to the Kiddush Hashem?
No.
Like, if you return something, it might, you know, might catch.
Yeah, I don't think it's a mission.
You get a lot of positive attention, you know.
I think that would be positive, but that's not, I don't think that's the obligation of
you. Well, what if you don't do that?
Right, I don't think it's the lost opportunity to be the Kaddish and Shemayim. I think it's the actual being Mechalel Shem. Yeah, that is the problem. If he makes a mistake, right, and it sounds over here like he makes a mistake, then it's okay to tell him. You don't have to identify. If they give you the wrong change in the supermarket, you don't have to tell them that they gave you the wrong change. That's so muteret. I see from the cases coming up, it seems like mutet, that you're even allowed to make them make a mistake. Like, you don't even identify that with that. Over here, down below, I don't know who it is, these footnotes always mention, that they justify all these positions by saying that they don't really respect property ownership. That's why you're allowed to trick them, which obviously have implications today, whether you're allowed to be matel them, are you allowed to trick them? Like Shimon, Zava Mikuti, Likna Dedava. He bought from a non-Jew a Likna Dedava, some sort of bowl or some sort of pot that was made of gold. Bemar, defies the law that he did it based on the fact that the non-Jew thought it was Nechosha copper. And it was really gold, so he bought it like a copper pot, but that was zuzay, for 4 zuz. So he paid for copper and he got gold, and he didn't tell him that it was gold. And on top of that, he kept one of the zuz. He didn't pay him the full 4, he only gave him the 3 zuz. He bought from 120 barrels, but maya, even though the kuti thought it was only 100, and he also kept some of the money. He didn't pay all the money. He says, I'm relying on you. There are two ways to interpret this. Rashi brings down one possibility. There is that I am relying on you, means that Rav Khan said to him, I am relying on you, and that way he would think that everything was okay. The other possibility is that the goy says to him, I'm relying on you that you counted the money, and I'm not going to count it again. Alright, Ravina, Zaman Dikla, Hubikuti, Litsalapa. Alright, that they bought together. They jointly bought a palm tree in order to cut it up for wood. Go and get the best pieces when they chop it off. He knows how many branches are there, but he doesn't know which one are the better ones or which one are the thicker ones. He was going on the way. He saw a bunch of grapes hanging, a branch of vine that coming out of a vineyard. It was a bunch of grapes hanging from it. Amalei the Shamei says to his servant, Zil Chazi, eat the Kudainenu. See if it's a non-Jewish grapevine. I see. Bring it for me. Eat the Yisraelenu. Go, I see. If it's a Jew, don't bring it to me. Shamal Kuti. The non-Jewish owner, some non-Jew heard this. Dava Yosef Bardesa, and he was sitting in the orchard. Amalei, the Kuti Shari. You're allowed to steal from non-Jews. Amalei, no. Kuti Shakul Demei, Sholo Shakul Demei. Right, a non-Jew would accept payment for this, a Jew would give it to me and say, don't pay me. So Tosfos says that was his intention, eat me kara. That really, when he asked for this originally, that was his original intent, that's what he meant, and he explained it to the Kuti, that his original intent was to pay for it, and he would only take something that he could pay for. So a non-Jew would accept payment, that's why he's willing to take it. A Jew wouldn't accept payment, he wouldn't take it. You obviously could read the Gemara otherwise, that he was going to take it until the Kuti, but the Kuti found out, he wanted to prevent a Chilul Hashem, and the response was their response to cover up what he was trying to do, but that's not necessarily what he originally intended to do.
Our continues, Gufa Amar Shmuel Dina de Machlute Dina. So this is the principle that Shmuel laid out for us that we questioned our Mishnah from. So Amar Rava, how do we know that Dina de Machlute Nida? Teda, the Katle Dikle, that they go down into people's fields, they take down their palm trees, they cut the wood, Vigashre Gishre, and they go ahead and build bridges with it, Ravina Layo, and we go across them, we use their bridges, we use what the Machlute creates. So we must not think that there's a problem, or we must think that Dina Machlute Dina, otherwise what they're taking from these individuals is stolen, and then how can we cross over these bridges? Maybe it's because there's Yeush. Maybe the whole reason that we have the possibility of crossing over these bridges is because the Balim have given up hope of getting the item back. It's not because Dina Machlute Dina, but rather it's a Din in Yeush. First of all, how could it be? Meaning that why is Yeush sufficient? Meaning that if it wasn't for Dina Machlute Dina, according to Rashi, what Heicha Miyayish means that why is Yeush by itself a sufficient reason to make it as we can cross over these bridges? Why? Because you're missing the other item that makes a kinyan over here. It makes it possible for someone to cross such a bridge or use such an item that it's no longer an item of gezel, and that is that you need Yeush plus either Shinui Rishut or Shinui Maaseh. So since you're missing, all you have here is Yeush by itself, and therefore you're missing Shinui Rishut because Rashi says it's in the Rishut HaRabim, so there's no Shinui Rishut. And number two is there's no Shinui Maaseh over here because Rashi quotes the Gemara that we saw earlier that go with the Dikla Mikru, that they're still called the logs of the Dekel or the wood of the Dekel, so they don't lose their shame. So there is no Shinui over here, and Yeush by itself would not be sufficient, so it must be that Dina Machlute Dina. Tosus, on the other hand, learns Heicha Miayshe means that the if that was the case, Hayelem Litva Abedin, the people who were using these bridges, or the wood came from their fields to build these bridges, right? They should have set up a toll booth for everybody who's crossing over the bridge and say, you got to pay me because that's my wood that you're using over there. Right, that it's course, it's the reason that we don't, they give up hope is because nobody's going to pay them anything. Mishom, the Dina Machlute Dina, because of Dina Machlute Dina, that the government's not going to allow for payment over here. So the Yeush is actually generated by the fact that there is Dina Machlute Dina. It's not because the Balaam really give up hope. They give up hope because the Din of the Malchus is not to pay them the money. If the Din of the Malchus is not to pay them the money, then they give up the Yeush. So the Yeush is not a real Yeush by itself, but it's a Yeush that's generated because of Dina de Malchuta Dina. So now the Gemara says, well, wait a minute. V'hadlo ka'avdei k'damar malko. How do you call this Dina Machlute Dina? The Avadim, or the workers of the government, don't do exactly what the king asks. Malka amrazilu v'kadlu mikol bage. The king says, go and take wood or take trees from all the fields that are around this area. You take one tree from each field and then go build the bridge. Vinu azlu, v'kadlu chad baga. For out of convenience, they go ahead and the workers come along and they go to one field and they just cut all the trees down and use the wood from there. They don't go and drag trees out from each field around the area. They just go into one field, one bika, one valley, and they take everything from there. So where it says, Shlucha de Malka Kemalko, and no, they are Dina de Machlute Dina because they are the Shluchim of the Melech. The Shluchim of the Melech have the same Din as the Melech. They take on the Tokiv of the Melech, and their decision is like Dina de Machlute Dina. Velo Tarach, right? So the reason that they made that decision is because they don't want to trouble themselves. It's not a decision of stealing. It's not a decision that is against what the king wanted, but rather it's just carrying out the will of the king in a way that's most convenient or easiest for them. V'inhu afsida nafshayu. And the owners of that field are the ones who lost for themselves. Why? The bailuhu the inkat mikolei bagayu mishkal demei. They should go around to all the fields or all the valleys in the area, all the bika'ot in the valley, in the area, and they should claim, and listen, they cut them all from my field. Really, they were supposed to tax each of you. They didn't do that. They came and took it from my field. Please, you gotta pay me up. You gotta go, and he should have collected the money. The fact that they didn't go and do that, they lost on their own. I mean, it's on their own accord that they lost the money. Truthfully, they are entitled to that money. And the cutting of the wood from their field is just a convenience. So, the servants of the Melech are really doing the bidding of the Melech. They're just doing it in the most convenient or the easiest manner, and they're not stealing from anybody because the individual who has all the wood taken from him really has recourse, and he could go around and claim from all the fields around him. Amar Rav, Mandin Mishkachach Bevei Dori, Paramanto de Malko. Whoever's found in the Goren, whoever's found taking in his wheat, then he is the one who pays out or ends up paying for the mas, the king's ransom or the king's tax over here. So what does that mean? that if there are joint owners of a field, and or the joint owners of a goren, and they all come in, they bring in their stuff from the fields around there, and they come to work it. Now, two or three of them either aren't there, they did their stuff right, and then the king's tax collector comes around and finds one of them there, and he ends up charging this individual for all of the fields around him. So that's okay. That's not considered stealing. That's not considered incorrect taxation, because truthfully, they are all chayav in the tax, and then he can go, and he has rights to go in then and collect it from the other three partners or other three owners, because they are all chayav in the tax of the melech. The way Rashi describes it over here is if it's a gabai zayisrohu, that the tax collector is actually a Jewish tax collector, and he bought the right of taxation from the king, then it's not a problem of gezel, because you do have a right to tax all the members of all the partners of the field, and you can single out one partner and say you pay it all, and then he can go back and collect it from them. On the other hand, b'ani milay shutfa, that's when they are partners. Aval arise arisetehu dekamafik. If it comes to, that's true if they're really partners and owners in the land. On the other hand, if it's just a sharecropper, then that's an incorrect taxation. You cannot tax the sharecropper because he doesn't own the land and he's not the one who should be paying the tax. And he's not responsible for the taxes either of the others or the partners or even of the field that he is working in. And therefore, according to the way Rashi is explaining it, that, if you go buy that from the king, that right to collect tax from the sharecroppers, that's an illegal tax, that's gezel, that's stealing. Or, again, if the sharecropper, you can't force, or the sharecropper is not obligated to pay the tax on behalf of all the other partners, because he's really not obligated in the tax at all. So, Amar Rava, Bar Mato, a person who is in a city, a Bar Mato, for another person in the city, Miv Avet, can be Mashkon. A Jewish tax collector that comes around and is collecting on behalf of the king, he's allowed to take collateral from one Jew in the city for the lack of payment by another Jew in the city. I mean, that is, because that's the dina de machut dina. That's the way it works. Vahani milay de barla ara vikarga de haishata. That's only if he's coming to collect the taxation, the head tax, as well as the land tax for that year. Because if it's a tax for that year, the king expects to get paid for it. And therefore, the way the process works is that the entire city is responsible, and therefore you can obligate one individual on behalf of the other individual, meaning that you can take collateral from him in order to ensure that the other individual pays the tax. Aval shata de khalif. But if it's for previous year's taxes, it's for back taxes, hovei fais malko khalif. If the king already was satisfied, the king's not coming back to collect the back taxes, he's done with his year, the previous year, he's not coming around. Therefore, you cannot force or impose that tax on the individual or take a mashkon from another Jew in order to force the his neighbor to pay the tax, because the king already forgave that tax, and therefore you don't have the right to pressure them in order to have the tax paid. These animals, these herders that live within the tchum, of the city, within the boundaries or the limits of the city, and they basically go around and they fertilize people's fields, they graze their animals there, and that helps them to fertilize the fields. Asur lekach mehem, you can't buy any animals from them, my taima, because the animals of the city get mixed up inside of their animals, and they end up really stealing the animals. So we have stolen merchandise within or in the context of their herds. Now, whereas if they are outside the boundaries of the city, outside the tchum, where they wouldn't get mixed up, then you can buy from them. If you see that the owners of the animals are running after him and saying, listen, that's my animal, what are you doing? Then of course you can't buy from them, because it's clear then that you are what's called, you're actually taking or buying stolen or hot merchandise. So the problem of the gezel issue is number one, and number two is that you are misayel over avera, then you're helping people continue to do bad things because you're supporting or paying for these animals despite the fact that they could be from a stolen merchandise. Machiz Rava. Okay, we'll stop over here.